My name is Bill Coleman with the Blandon Foundation, and this is the second of our 2008 webinar series, and we're excited to have people with us today. Most notably, we have Pete Borchert, who is with us from Alltel, and he's going to do a presentation on the wireless internet evolution that's happening now and will happen into the future. Pete is a graduate of Mankato State University with a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration. Started working for Midwest Wireless in 1996, and first in customer service, then in sales, and has been with them ever since, even as they changed from Midwest Wireless to Alltel, and now soon to Verizon. So he's now a senior market analyst for Clearwave, which is their wireless internet product, and waiting to go on board with the Verizon. So with that, I'm just going to welcome Pete, and I'm also going to ask people if they can to mute their telephones so we can keep our background noise to a minimum. If you have questions, please use the chat feature there on the box on your computer and type that in, and I'll take a look at those, and when the time is right, I'll jump in and we'll ask Pete those questions. So thanks for your cooperation on that, and welcome, Pete.
Thank you, Bill. As Bill said, once again, my name is Peter Borchert. I'm with Alltel, and I was with Midwest Wireless for 11 years prior to that. When I put this presentation together, just wanted to go from my core knowledge, and that's what I've been through. And so we'll start with a little history there. Going to the first slide, this is an overview of the technologies that that I'm pretty familiar with, and we'll go over them one by one. But from a mobile aspect, mobile means driving 50, 60 miles an hour down the road and being able to function. We started out in the very beginning and with amps. Then we went to CSD. I'm going to get into each one of these a little bit more in depth. We went to a CSD circuit switch data with our next evolution. Then we switched to CDMA. And right now, currently, we have in our network, and a certain percentage of our network are population centers, we have 1XEVDO. And once again, this is all very mobile. And then we'll talk a little bit about Verizon and the Generation 4 technology of long-term evolution. on the fixed side, and that's what I'm more involved with, the Clearwave product has employed frequency hopping spread spectrum as their technology with, most of our network having that. And then we overlaid a lot of our network with a new technology, orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. You're going to hear a lot more about OFDM because it's kind of the basis for the future wireless, really efficient bandwidth, and WiMAX as well. And OFDM is really kind of part of WiMAX as well. So I'll try to clarify that. So that's an overview slide. We're going to talk about the different frequencies. Now, these technologies we talked about prior lie on the different frequencies. Most of all of our mobile products have been in the licensed frequency ranges of the 850 to the just under 900. And also we own, those are considered their cellular frequencies. And then the license frequency of 1.9 gigahertz or 1900 megahertz. And we own a swath there in a lot of areas. And you probably heard a lot of hubbub about the 700 megahertz frequency that was auctioned off earlier this year, in which Verizon was a big winner. And there's some exciting things about that frequency coming up. Unlicensed. Once again, our fixed product has been over the unlicensed frequencies, 2.4 gigahertz and 5.8. Our frequency hopping spread spectrum With that, we've deployed it on the 2.4 gigahertz, which is unlicensed, and the 5.8 gigahertz. Looking currently, a lot of people are real seriously at the 3.65 gigahertz for a WiMAX product to be coming out. And we'll get into that a little bit further as well. Once again, go ahead and shoot any questions. This is kind of an overview. Overview of what we're going to be talking about. Let's get more in depth here. AMPS, Advanced Mobile Phone System. Once again, this is the first generation of wireless phone systems, and data was transferred over our first generation phone systems. We had a tower go up in New Ulm in 1987, so that was the start of it all. People were buying cell phones and driving over to New Ulm to use them, so it was kind of exciting, the 3-watt phones. Now, a lot of contractors, you know, they had these mobile places, these mobile trailers at their construction sites. And I remember selling the 3-watt bag phones and a cellular connector that Motorola made, and they were using them for fax machines that the 2.4 kilobits rate or modeming in. Just real simple data into their headquarters. So that was the first generation, and that happened for quite some time. Now, this is over, once again, the 850 original cellular licenses that were delved out and the B side of that. Okay, circuit switch data. That was the second generation. Time division, TDMA, is the technology that we deployed. Started in 1998. Some of you recall there were the Nokia. We predominantly sold Nokia phones. There was the 2160, which is a big black phone with a extendable antenna. And then we had the little smaller, sleeker 6100 series phones. Now with this, we packaged up what we call data connectivity cables. So you could actually use your phone as a modem using the serial port on your computer. You'd use the serial port on your computer, plug it into the bottom of your phone. You'd get some drivers and some software to activate the modem, and now you could get on the Internet using our TDMA service. Once again, limited to 9.6 kilobits per second. So we're gaining, but still... Now, our appetites at the time were still quite a bit larger than that mobile product would allow. But certainly we did have field engineers and construction people that really did adapt to this. I was in Rochester, Minnesota at the time selling to predominantly Olmsted County, and we sold a lot of it. TDMA, when you explain that technology, the way it's compressed or the theory behind it, it's kind of like a timeshare. People own a property together or bandwidth together, and it's sliced and diced in time. So if there's any questions about that, that's a technology that we adapted, and I don't think that there is any of that left in our network currently. But 9.6 kilobits, so we're getting a little faster now. So now we're going to CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access. This is a 2.5 generation wireless technology. We ran it on the 850 licensed megahertz and the 1.9 gigahertz or 1900 megahertz. Once again, licensed, so we can turn the wattage up at the transceivers and get it to go further. And the 850 megahertz and the 1900 are low enough frequencies that they're not real line of sight dependent with the power wattage that we put on them. Code division multiple access is a technology that allowed us 30 to 60 kilobits per second to the user. We started in 2002. But code division multiple access, the way, in layman's terms, you describe it as being into, like, let's say, at a party where there's a whole bunch of conversations going on, but you're listening to just one conversation and you tune the rest out. Or if you're in a room and there's multiple languages being spoke, you just listen to the language of the conversation you're listening to. So that allowed for much more data to be sent over the same amount of bandwidth and allowed us the 30 to 60 kilobits. Now you're starting to see some usable bandwidth at the 1X RTT. Just a little bit better than dial-up. And so that was an exciting time for us. So we were selling more and more data connectivities that kits so people could connect up their phones to their computers and get internet access virtually anywhere in our network when that overlay was done. Then you saw the advent, instead of the cable, the Bluetooth technologies, where the phone could talk to the computer wirelessly, in a personal area network. So you didn't have to use that cable. So it created a convenience. And then you could use the phone as a modem via the Bluetooth connection rather than a cable, a cumbersome cable. So that's a little bit about 1XRTT. And they call that the 2.5 generation. Now, the third generation, the 1XEVDO, Midwest Wireless started putting it in some population centers like Rochester, Mankato, and other areas in our network. They consider this the third generation of wireless data. We're deploying that over the license frequencies of 850 and 1.9 gigahertz, 150 megahertz. Low enough frequencies, line of sight, we it's licensed so we can increase the power outage and you don't need line of sight to receive it, or not as much. So this is allowing user speeds or customer experience of 500 kilobits per second download and 128 kilobits upload. Now, your speeds vary depending upon the traffic on the tower as well. So we do have, speeds that do vary. But once again, now you're looking at rather large speeds in a mobile environment. We've been selling carts, 1XRTT and EVDO PCMA cards that slip into the laptop. And so you don't necessarily need to use the phone. You can have a transceiver built right in or put right into your laptop, and so and use your laptop even as a phone if you so desire. This is Evolution Data Optimized, and we started overlaying our network in 2005. EVDO has got many different revisions. Revision 0 does not allow for a term that's quality of service, a term that we're seeing a lot in the broadband arena. Quality of service allows for the packets to be prioritized, and that is very necessary in some applications like voice over IP, for instance, or VPN. Some of the quality of service creates low latency. If you have 200 milliseconds of latency, then a lot of applications like your VPNs or voice over IP applications will not run correctly. So the revision A of 1XEVDO allows for the quality of service, so that's kind of an exciting. Now, these are all carrier-based mobile technologies. Okay. Now, moving up to the future here. The fourth generation of wireless. This is, technology guys get real excited, and the engineers are working real hard to push more bits and bytes down the pipe here. Fourth generation wireless, long-term evolution. The specifications and the standards are assumed to be complete at the end of 2008, and that's coming up. That's going to be coming up next month or next 2 months here. And the statement that I've seen in a lot of the trade magazines is that this is assumed to dominate the world's mobile infrastructure in all markets after 2011. So it's going to take a few years to get there, but once again, it's allowing for a user experience of 300 megabits and download of 75 megabits. So it's quite, and they're trying to make it faster. And it is faster, but there's a lot of overhead involved. These 700 megahertz frequencies, once again, being lower than the 800, they're less line of sight dependent. And being that it's licensed, then you control it so you can increase the power and really get very good coverage, very ubiquitous coverage. And the engineers are making this technology so it's very, very fast and very, very frequency efficient. And quality of service will be employed, so there will be low latencies and packet prioritization, lots of manipulation of the packets. So that's the exciting part. And as you may or may not know, in the auctions, the 700 megahertz auctions, earlier this year, there were some big winners, and Verizon was considered to be one of the biggest winners of this frequency. So this frequency, which was held by a lot of the TV stations, has to be vacated by February 2009. So you will see networks going up with this 700 megahertz frequency in the not-so-distant future. So that's kind of exciting, and I'm going to come back to that a little bit and kind of a wireless strategy at the very end. But this is the technology to keep, you know, your eyes on from a carrier-based. Bill did mention, you know, there is some public safety frequencies out there, county frequencies of 800 megahertz. Once again, though, and 2.5, you know, those frequencies are both very, very desirable. 800 megahertz is very low, so you can send it a long ways. It'll permeate solid objects better. So that's what makes it desirable. And the engineers obviously are creating technologies that allow lots and lots of bandwidth to be carried over them, and good bandwidth. So that's kind of exciting. And once again, the 2.5 as well. And being that it would be public safety, so it would be considered more of a licensed or controlled environment, so you could increase power outputs. So a lot of partnerships will be probably struck up with the government agencies, with providers, to help them build networks and then give them a priority of service, because they will be good technologies that will allow you to prioritize service. Fixed wireless, and I lost my Clearwave emblem didn't come through on that. Kind of a little bit of a commercial here. Bear with me, but Clearwave is the product in which I've been spending the last 5-6 years of my life working on. So that's what I'm going to talk about. The Minnesota Trade Department of Trade Economic Development allowed us to start doing this back in 2001. So we started, and we didn't start with any customers back in 2001, and we have now 11,000 customers in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa. Customer premise CP equipment, 2.4 gigahertz. That's what it looks like. It's the size of a pizza box. We use the frequency hopping spread spectrum. It's an Alvarian product, and once again, we have 11,000 customers, and that's our 2.4. Our 5.8, the technology of orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, that OFDM technology is what is overlaid in a lot of these new, a lot of the new technologies that allow for lots and lots of bandwidth to be pushed over these frequencies. Once again, this is 20 times faster. We use the 5.8 public frequency now to carry this OFDM, and we are getting 45 meg connections. So once again, and that's at 1 watt of power. So we're very excited about this technology. 4 to 5 miles line of sight dependent, however. So just a little bit about the OFDM technology. You're going to see that in WiMAX, which this is really considered a pre-WiMAX technology. Once again, our first year of operation in 2001, we had 142 customers. Currently, we have 168 sites. We're on grain elevators, water towers, and a lot of our network is on the existing cell sites that Altel owns and now Verizon. 359 communities, and we're right around that 11,000, 12,000 mark and growing. There's our coverage map. You can see our blue is the blue is the 5.8 or the OFDM large bandwidth capacity, and the green is our 2.4 1 meg capacity from the CPE to the AU. Any questions? Here's some examples of applications and remote locations in which we have supplied high-speed internet access. This is a ballpark. It's been hit with a few baseballs, but it's still hanging in there. Here's a ice house in the middle of a lake. A gentleman wanted to do business while he ice fished, so he had to have it on Madison Lake. Obviously, windmill. Once again, rural area of the country. It's got a large vertical structure. Had a hard time getting line of sight from his house, so we put it on his windmill. People got to have broadband. Implements. Rural weather information systems. We got about 20 of these with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Once again, people are building large vertical structures for not only TV, but for internet access out in the country. Other technologies, WiMAX, you've heard me talk about that. You know, the product that we're using for our 5.8 is considered a WiMAX because it is 802.16. It is fixed. Now, you're going to see more on the mobile side of it with the revision E, or the E standard, and you're going to see 70 megabits per second symmetrical speeds. So that's quite bandwidth efficient. Once again, WiMAX not as bandwidth efficient as the engineers, the IEEE is coming up with for the carrier-based technology of long-term evolution. However, still very, very fast speeds. And there's always going to be a place, you know, the industry magazines are saying there's always going to be a place for the WiMAX technology. So something to keep in mind. 802.11n, Bill spoke a little bit about that. More, you know, once again, this is more of a local area network or based technology. It would be on the 5 gigahertz unlicensed, and it's you know, Ethernet speeds over a wireless. So you're going to see that being put into the laptops, much like the G's and the B technologies, and you'll see the transceiver work not only at 2.4 gigahertz in these machines, these Centrino chips, but you're going to see them at 5 gigahertz employing the 802.11n. And once again, the industry magazines, this is not totally finalized, so it's supposed to be finalized by the IEEE by November 2009. Once again, the objective here.
Excuse me, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Can you? We have a question about the if your network is used to serve any school networks, the bigger bandwidth school networks.
Yes, we have. We kind of partnered with the Southeast Service Co-op, and I believe we still have a few schools using that technology in southeastern Minnesota. We've been putting in 5.8 links, the OFDM technology, and working with them. We do. And, it has been working good for them. Once again, this Elverian product that we use is very low latency, 20 milliseconds. And you can employ quality of service and run applications like VPN and voice over IP over it. So the answer is yes.
Are you able to do video over that?
Streaming video can be done at 500 kilobits per second. So, yes, we have
okay.
With our product. I'm sorry, Bill?
What about interactive television?
Yep, we've
our
links. Yep, okay. The Elverian product supports that as well.
Very good.
The OFDM product, we would definitely be using the 5.8 gig with the OFDM product to enable that type of application.
Okay,
yep.
Thanks, Pete.
Yeah. The wireless strategic objective is always to supply access in all environments of connectivity to the consumers so they can utilize communications, information, applications anywhere, anytime is we're trying to catch up, with the physical infrastructures of fiber. And as you can see, they're always kind of a step ahead. But what will our bandwidth appetites be in 2011 when long-term evolution is supposed to be the standard for wireless broadband and WiMAX? What will our appetites be? Will a gig be enough? Will 500 meg be enough? Those are the questions that, when the end game right now, as I see it, is long-term evolution and WiMAX, but it's just changing so fast, and our appetites are getting larger. So I don't know. That's kind of where you open it up for discussion, What applications are going to drive our appetites, going to see more and more. And that's where I say, maybe unmute your phones and have a discussion here about the applications, the bottlenecks that you guys see in your applications currently, whether it's personal or business. What applications aren't running as well as you'd like them to over your current speeds? What speeds do most people have in the room? Are they on T1s at work?
Wireless deal.
Or at home. What are your speeds at home? Are you on a cable modem that gives you a meg or better, or 20 meg? Or are you on a DSL product that's 1 meg? Or 756 or 512.
Pete, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
When I work with communities now, the mobile wireless services seem to be just really increasing in priority for communities as something that people need to be able to really function in today's business world. As I travel around, coverage always seems to be pretty good right along the highway, along the major roads, but then degrades significantly, along a county road or, somebody's rural home. What's the outlook for the light technology for being able to reach a broader part of the rural community?
Well, once again, Bill, that 850 megahertz and the 700 megahertz technologies, when licensed, you can put power outputs on that will cover quite a wide swath. And it's not as line of sight dependent. So getting to the rural areas with those bandwidths will be very achievable and, whenever it takes off here. They're going to start building networks in 2009. Now, it's going to take 2 to 3 years in order for networks to have that. But once again, Bill, that 700 megahertz is going to go very far, and it's not going to be very line of sight dependent, so it's going to get there quicker than we think. Now,
so
the demand.
In a farming area, do you think that'd be 100% coverage then? In a,
probably know, by 2012, we're going to be in the 90s, I would say. But,
okay.
You know, that's just, I don't have, if I had a crystal ball, you know, once again, that's dependent on how fast the technology is adapted. You know, economy is a big part of it, as we know. Technology slows in tough economic times. People just aren't willing to pay that extra amount for, you know, for that convenience. But once again, you're going to see the mobile and the mobile and the fixed somewhat come together, because the mobile is going to get further. So your customer out in the sticks, that it still may be cost prohibitive to get fiber or physical infrastructure out to, it'll just be covered by the wireless. And maybe not with as much bandwidth, but very comparable. That's why the real delta here is, what will our bandwidth appetites be? Will it be a gig? Will 500 meg be enough? Will 300 meg be enough? And Lisa asked a question, what are the costs of the package prices or costs to the end users? Currently, you know, with our existing fixed and mobile infrastructures, we have some all-you-can-eat packages for right around $50 for some mobile internet service, where you can get the cards that go on your computers, and between $50 and $60 for all-you-can-eat mobile wireless. And that's our network in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa on the mobile side, is that 30 to 50 kilobits per second throughout. But once again, in the population centers, we have that 200 down, 128 up. So once again, not as robust, as your other physical broadband providers, but we always seem to be one step behind the physical plants. Paula said, when you say 90% coverage, you're referring to the entire state. I'm located in Cook County, and we have significant line of sight problems. Yes, Cook County is up there with very low population density and a lot of trees. You know, that would probably be, Paula, the other 10%. You know, unfortunately, the economics of carrier. You know, our carrier-based technology does go where the revenues are. So low population areas would probably be the slowest to evolve. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there are programs in which, you know, the universal service funds that may help prioritize those areas utilizing those funds. So there are exceptions to that rule, if those programs come through. Does that help answer some questions?
This is Vince Robinson. Just wondering, as we move to these 700 megahertz systems, you're indicating that accessibility will improve for rural areas. What about the reliability of these systems for business services such as call centers and that type of thing?
Once again, our wireless fix currently, you know, has got a documented uptime of 99.9%. So we do have very good reliability. Now, call centers, you know, are the type of environment where zero downtime is necessary. So we have brought our product in as the redundant to a physical connection. You know, we have. So. And it works out very well, because it would be a, you know, true path diversity is what we try to bring to that when we are called in for those scenarios. So very reliable, to answer your question. Just trying to look at some of the chat questions here. I see Russ. I've spoken with Russ. There are companies that could serve those areas, but they are not mainstream. Okay. What else, Bill, should we address as far as questions or comments?
I think the if you could, you know, talk a little bit about how your company and maybe other wireless companies, and it might give Russ here a chance to talk about kind of partnering to overcome some of the financial the market issues, like a place like Cook County where they're. So how would you go about trying, if you're a community leader, trying to stimulate investment in wireless technologies in your community? You know, one advantage for Southern Minnesota over the past several years is that, you know, Midwest Wireless was a hometown kind of company.
You bet.
And, you know, you can always find someone to talk to. 1-800-VERIZON's a little tougher
yeah.
Contact, you know, to try and find the right people. I mean, obviously you're looking for lower cost to increase return on investment, but how can communities really make sure that they have what they need for their community members?
Well, Bill, as you know, the way Midwest and or Clearwave started things, we went to communities and we did all the marketing research in the world about competitive environments and take rates based upon demographics. But the number one success that we always did have, Bill, was going to the community and just, you know, getting the community involved, the city city council. And we'd partner with a city that that didn't have many options or any, and they would offer up the use of their vertical real estate, whether it's a water tank or a local grain elevator, and we would trade service and promotion for the use of the vertical real estate to get line of sight to the customer. And we had a great success with that. It did drive down the costs of that the earlier the Department of Trade and Economic Development, I don't know what it's referred to as now, but the grants that we received to go to low population areas was a big help for us. Universal Service Fund was something more on the licensed or carrier side, but those two things were a great driver of the business and enabled us to get to the 12,000, 13,000 customer mark. So continuing on with that, I mean, now that there are many options in these communities, maybe not as mutually beneficial to both parties now. So that is going to be a hurdle in the future, is the costs of these vertical real estate.
From your point of view, the carriers, obviously, you know, I think, you know, if I look at my own telecommunications bill, I got my cable company that I get, you know, triple play from, but I've got my cell phone as well. And I think more and more people are hoping that someday to be able to have kind of a single bundler where they won't have to be writing checks, you know, for different kind of things. So do you see this as, how do you see, I just talked to a friend of mine who now gets his, through T-Mobile, gets his home phone service, you know, essentially a VoIP service from T-Mobile. So he's got his, you know, all his internet and home phone and cell phone from one company. Do you see that more and more happening, and do you think the wireless companies are going to be that vehicle?
You know, once again, crystal ball stuff. When you look at the aggressiveness of Verizon and that 700 megahertz and the bandwidth that's going to be enabled with that 700 megahertz, the bandwidth efficiencies, I think you're going to see that evolve into a triple play all in of itself. It very well could be, you know, packetized transmissions for programming. Obviously, your cell phone, being that it's highly mobile, can be used as a fixed as well. So when you talk about television, cell phone, and internet, it's a truly packetized network when we get to generation 4 technology. also the I do believe that the consumer residential play will be huge with these new technologies from a wireless standpoint. You know, it's very valuable, but the efficiencies in the wireless spectrum are going to enable the carriers to play, to get into the triple play arena. And you're going to see a lot of partnering, too, back and forth between, you know, physical or landline type infrastructures and wireless. You're going to see more of that.
Pete, we have a question from Mountain Iron from Lisa there, who's, you know, if what's the range of some of these technologies if you're to put a radio up on top of a water tower? What's the expected range now of the existing technologies, and what do you see in the future?
Once again, our current fixed OFDM product, 5.8, is 5 to 7 miles line of sight, 2.4, maybe a little bit better than that. But once again, those fixed technologies, 1 watt of power, you're limited to line of sight or near line of sight. 5 to 7 miles is a good rule of thumb. And water towers are great structures to be on, and so are grain elevators, except the grain elevators shake sometimes a little bit, and they blow up. So I'll tell people won't let me put any antennas on grain elevators anymore. Because we've had a few of them blow up on us. But, yeah, 5 to 7 miles. And the new technologies, obviously, the 700 megahertz in a rural area where there's not a high population density, you know, you're going to be able to get 20 miles. They're going to be able to push that out multiple watts. And with that 700 megahertz, it's going to go a long ways. So,
will that go through pine trees?
Well, what is the pine tree raises havoc with the 2.4s and the 2.5s, I believe, because it's a shorter frequency. The 700 megahertz, I don't believe it raises as much havoc. However, they are very dense, so that does decrease the range quite a bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Russ, I know you're on the conference. Do you want to talk about your company for a minute?
Bill, can you hear me on this side?
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Well, Pete, you did an outstanding job, and it's always fun to talk to experts in the field. Regarding our organization, as Bill mentioned, our group is called Maximum Communications, Inc., and we are a wireless broadband internet service provider, very much the likes of what Pete's working with. And our focus is 100% exclusively the rural communities in rural America. I think Pete really talked about something that was very correct, and that is we don't really know, and you can't really tell where the customer wants to go with regards to broadband. All we do know, and we can be very assured of, is the fact that we want more and more internet access, and with internet access comes a whole bevy of opportunities for communities, for individuals, for enterprise, and all of those things. And the technology, as he alluded to, is rapidly changing. It's very, very difficult to get your hands around where are we today and where is this stuff going and how fast will it come. The evolution, long-term evolution, LTE, is definitely something on the horizon. And the use of different various levels of spectrum are, an important criteria, an important consideration when making your decisions. But, you know, as he alluded to, we are focused 100% in the WiMAX technology, in the today and in the now. And what's really wonderful about WiMAX, as he alluded to with the ClearWave system, in the pre-wave or the pre-WiMAX, they were able to do things with the line of sight arrangement. So you have to actually see the site and you actually have to be connected, but you were able to get wireless broadband to places we never got it to before in a very inexpensive manner. In the new, as Pete alluded to, in the 16E, which is what WiMAX, Maximum Communications, is all about, we're talking about a mobile environment. And as we all know, that one thing, the one key criteria we can't put back in the bottle, or the genie we can't shove back in the bottle, is mobility. And I think all of you guys have touched on that today during this presentation. But again, our organization is focused on 100% dealing with rural communities, creating those partnerships like Pete alluded to, and bringing solutions to those communities where they absolutely need it. And the technology exists today to do that more economically for both the end user as well as the consumers. And the one thing we all know for sure is it's going to continue to keep evolving, and the convergence of, you know, data and entertainment and VoIP and a host of other things is going to continue to keep evolving and get better. And we're very, very excited about being in a position of dealing with areas that really need it, and look forward to working with a number of these communities here in the future.
Thanks. You know, we've seen over the last several years a number of communities do municipal Wi-Fi networks, and a lot of them have run into some difficulties with being able to provide the service that people are looking for inside their homes, and the reliability of the Wi-Fi. So we're seeing a lot of that Wi-Fi action kind of transition to be municipal kind of applications for building inspectors, and in Tucson, I know they have their ambulances all hooked up to their Wi-Fi network, and so people can get real-time video from the inside the ambulance to the hospital. We saw the Minneapolis Wi-Fi network in action when the 35 bridge went down. What do you guys think about just Wi-Fi as an investment, or do you see these new other mobile technologies just surpassing that and making 802.11g kind of a thing of the past? Pete?
Well, once again, it comes down to spectrum efficiencies, you know, and managing that traffic. And in the WiMAX and the carrier-based long-term evolution EVDO are built specifically to deal with that better, I would say, on a macro basis than maybe a Wi-Fi. Would that be a correct statement, Russ?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Pete. You know, well, here's the easiest scenario I have, and I've been asked that question a lot lately. Imagine, again, the Minneapolis thing came into service, and where we were 4 years ago or 5 years ago when we were thinking about Wi-Fi and connecting basically home routers and making them exterior grade and attaching them to light poles, it was a very good thought, and it was a very good idea. But just purely from a practical standpoint, if you could put a site on every light pole in town and you'd had, say, 700 of them, or you could put two or three cell sites up or be, you know, co-locate on an existing structure, and you would have four pieces of equipment putting an umbrella over a city, which logically would be more effective. And that is essentially kind of what's happening today when you talk about WiMAX and LTE technologies. You're blanketing in a complete area or a complete, putting an umbrella over a complete area and allowing people to move freely within that area. And so, again, I think there's beneficial applications. And one of the things that I see, Bill, is a convergence of both of the convergence of both technologies. We have the capability today in our designs to put a massive umbrella over the entire city. And then in areas where there are, pockets of coverage or campuses or internal issues, you know, maybe we might be in tunnels or we might be in large, complexes, you know, maybe it's a school or a hospital, being able to put in what we call, femtocells or picocells, smaller pieces of equipment to get that signal in there and be able to give those people the nomadic and the mobile functionality. So I think it's evolved, as I mentioned earlier, it's evolving quickly. And it's gone to a more efficient use of bandwidth and a more efficient use of transferring those signals around and the traffic around in a more economical manner.
Thanks for that. Are there other questions out there? I have one, Pete. I wonder if you could tell me about what you see as the relationship between fiber networks and wireless and kind of the interconnectedness of those things.
Well, your fiber obviously has the capabilities of bringing lots and lots of bandwidth. You know, you talked earlier about when we were offline about fiber to the home and all that that brings, except really mobility. But once again, cost effectiveness to some of the rural areas is going to be prohibitive and still going to be prohibitive for a long time, not only with the cost of fiber, but just the labor to do it, you know, the links and what it takes. But, you know, backhaul, our network now has got quite a fiber backbone that we use to get to the access units that then get to the customer premise. So obviously it's invaluable from that aspect. So where affordable, it's a necessity because of its capacity, no question about it. But once again, you know, you still... Fiber is a physical piece of equipment. It's landline. It's not mobile. So, and wireless enables mobility. So that is, as Russ said, the genie in the bottle. We all want it when we want it, and we want all of it when we want it. We're very spoiled and getting more and more.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. Are there any other questions from the audience? If not, look for a link on the Blandon on Broadband blog page later today for a for the slides. We're also kind of as an experiment here, we're recording this conference, and we're going to try that and get a link to that file as well. So keep an eye on that so you can let other people know about the great information that was provided here today. Pete, I really want to thank you for your participation and look forward to seeing what happens with the wireless technologies. Russ, if you want to send me a quick email with your contact information, we can get that on the blog as well. So people are looking for partners for wireless in their community. That would be an opportunity for you guys to explore.
Wonderful. Thank you, Bill.
And thanks for the opportunity to speak.
Nice job, Peter.
Thanks, Russ.
Thanks to everyone, and have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. Have a good day.